This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It is The Bigger Picture. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, finally made it in the studio with me. Welcome, Dr. Rajesh. I'm sure it's been quite a ride to the studio.
It has, Mira. I was rushing for this lovely smell of paint fumes. I can't wait to get there.
I so apologize. I mean, most of our guests have actually complained. We are renovating, so just bear with us till, you know, we get our act together.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm already high on something or another, so you've got to help me through this show. Okay, our phone lines are open. 0377-109-1000 is the number to call. We're discussing smart teams in healthcare, Dr. Rajesh. You decided on this topic because of a TED Talk by Eric Dishman. Eric is actually, was in college. Doctors told him he had 2 to 3 years to live, and that was a long time ago. But now Dishman puts his experience and his expertise as a medical tech specialist together to suggest a bold idea for reinventing healthcare. You just want to tell us a little bit more and what sort of got you going and wanting to talk about this?
Okay, let's look at my personal philosophy for healthcare. You know, I think that's probably a good place to start. I've always believed that healthcare is a team effort. I've never ever subscribed to this idea of the sort of the lone ranger out there solving problems in terms of healthcare. And I just assumed that was the norm. I assumed that everyone subscribed to the idea that healthcare was a team sport. Mm-hmm. And when I came across this talk by Eric Dishman, it actually brought it home for me to say, well, what happens when healthcare isn't a team sport? What happens when we don't get it right for patients?
Is that what's happened now?
Largely, I think the short answer is yes. Mm-hmm. I think largely what's happening in current medical practice is we're getting very compartmentalized. And when we get very compartmentalized, we don't see the picture as a whole. Mm-hmm. There's a great philosophical quote that says that the physician is obligated to see more than the disease in the man. He is obligated to see the diseased man in his environment. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that really sort of sets the tone for the way healthcare should be done. So in current medical practice, we work in silos. You know. I have patients who come to me for second opinions. I got lots of second and third opinions. Mm-hmm. And patients come and say, do I really need the surgery? And, you know, when the answer is no, they'll say, well, why was I offered it? I said, well, you know, uncle, you go to fish shop, got no chicken, only go fish.
But why do you think that has happened? Is it because it's become very commercialized?
No, I think it's because when a man only has a hammer, every problem's a nail. Mm. You know, and I think The training in healthcare is a separate beast from the service and delivery of healthcare. I think the mistake that's happened in healthcare is they seem to be one and the same. So how you train is assumed to be how you practice. Mm-hmm. Whereas in actual fact, training is a derivative. Practice is the real thing, you know, seeing patients on a day-to-day basis, sorting out the range and complexity of problems that we do on a day-to-day basis, that's reality. Whereas training, on the other hand, occurs as a slice of that reality. But what's translated is people come away with a very narrow skill set and they go, well, this is the skill set I have, mm-hmm. that I've spent all these time, years and effort acquiring. Surely every problem can fit into that skill set.
Yeah. But then you've worked, obviously, with other specialists when it comes to, you know, your surgeries that mm-hmm. you carry out. Mm-hmm. What's that like? You know, you're working, few of you working on one single patient. What's that like?
Let's sort of define working on. Very often, we do work with different specialties. And we sort of get to the limit of our knowledge and say, okay, I think you need to see a or X-ologist, mm-hmm. like, you know, and sort of everyone's some sort of ologist. So that's, in terms of working with people, that's actually quite nice, because if you know the limit of your knowledge, then you know when to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of just very recently I saw a lady in clinic whom I thought had a particular problem, and I said to her, look, you know, I can either give you a whole series of operations, or maybe it could be solved with a tablet or, you know, an injection or some other thing which I haven't thought about. Why don't you go and see this person? Right, I know him to be good, I know him to be competent. He's a little bit abrupt, but he's very good at what he does. Mm-hmm. So she went to see him, and then, you know, I met him in the corridor and I said, oh, you know, what do you think of this lady? And she said, not absolutely nothing that I can fix. You know, so in that sense, knowing my colleague, knowing his competence, knowing his personality, it's very easy to work with him, mm-hmm. right? That's the one work with that we do. The other work with that we do is when we operate on somebody. Now that's a whole different ballgame. So if you have a few different people doing an operation on one person, the clear and unambiguous statement must be, whose patient is this? Who has the responsibility? Who is going to carry the buck? Who is going to explain to the patient what happened?
Who's the captain?
Not just who's the captain, because captain suggests it's a team sport. It's more than a captain. It's more, who's the advocate? Who is this patient's advocate who understands what this patient's needs are? Mm-hmm. What is it that this person desires? I'm just a technician. So in that sense, I do get called in as the technician. And, you know, that's a lovely, it's nice to do because it's pure technical work.
Yes.
You know, I go in, I do my technical bit and I walk away. That's fun. But yeah, I wouldn't like to do it every day. Whereas on the other hand, being able to call on colleagues with different skill sets is a real pleasure because I can say to a person, I know how to get this fixed. I can't fix it, but I know someone who can help us fix it. And, you know, I think that's the sort of conversation that old style GPs used to have.
But what makes an effective team member? You've worked with people in the past.
I have. I think an effective team member is the advocate for the patient or group of patients. You know, I did think about sort of joining an effective team when I was very junior. Mm-hmm. And that was when I just finished medical school. I was doing what we call the internship. And my first job was in orthopedics. And the intern's role in the orthopedic department was to make sure that all the patients were fed and watered. Fed and watered by 7:30 in the morning for us to go down to the operating theatre and get the patient on the table prepared for the big hotshot surgeon to come in. Mm-hmm. At the end of surgery, he would look around and say, now the lowest member of the team, go and get coffee. Mm. And that would inevitably be me.
Which is what every intern does.
Which is what every intern does, exactly right. Now, I thought that was a little bit demeaning, but I realized that what I had entered was a well-oiled machine. There was a team that did a job, it did its job very well, and I was a cog in a machine. Mm-hmm. And the point at which it came home to me was at 7:30 when the senior male nurse on the ward says to me, Doc, you need to look at this ECG. I think this patient's having a heart attack. I went, oh, the nurse telling me a patient's having a heart attack. That's interesting. Let's have a look at this. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the ECG and I went, oh boy, this is bad. So I was there attending to the patient while my pager was going off and the phone was going off going, why aren't you here, you imbecile? You're supposed to be in the operating theater getting coffee. And by the time, life of an intern, by the time I had settled it and I'd actually walked into the operating theater, no one had batted an eyelid. You know, so I wasn't berated, I wasn't put down. It was, there's a machine, it's a system. The system works very well. The system works very well to look after patients who need this surgery. And I think that's what makes a team. You know, the thing that makes a team really great is when everybody knows what they're doing for that person. Mm-hmm. Everybody is an advocate for the patient in their own way. So, you know, the nurse on the ward's an advocate for the patient to say, I need to get you the appropriate level of care because I'm nursing you on the ward. My role was to say, oh, wow, you know, my job's to fix this and get it fixed no matter how hard it is. So that, you know, just getting back to that patient, because I still remember it like it was yesterday. The patient had had a hip replacement surgery and was having a heart attack. And while I was trying to put a line into their arm in order to give them the medication, they started fitting.
Oh, damn.
And once they started fitting, they lost control of their bowels and soiled themselves. And I said to myself, wow, this is just like ER. This is what I trained all these years for. And the team came together. You know, the junior nurse started to have a flap because the patient was essentially writhing in their own poo. Mm-hmm. But the senior members of the team said, right, we know what to do. The first thing is we get rid of the heart attack. The second thing is we get rid of the fits. The third thing is we clean the patient up. You know, and that was a lovely team to be a part of, because everyone knew what they were doing and who they were doing it for. It wasn't for anyone's ego. It wasn't because they thought it was the right thing to do. It was for the best interest of the patient. And I think that's really what makes a great healthcare team.
Right. We're discussing smart teams in healthcare. And of course, we're going to move on to smartphone apps that, you know, seem to allow people to monitor your health. I mean, there's a whole load of apps available out there. How effective are these? And what happens to smart teams in healthcare then? I'm Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon in the studio with me. Our phone lines are open, 0377 109,000. If you'd like to give us a call, you can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019,000. We have a question here from Paul from Petaling Jaya. Paul is saying there is an ECG phone called EpiLife, which monitors heart rhythm abnormalities, and it's connected to a well-known medical center. Does this mean healthcare could be cheaper in the future, as remote monitoring does save cost and support staff?
Okay, so let's try and break that down into its component parts. I'm all for efficiency improvement. I'm actually working with a group of guys now, and we're making a robotic ultrasound arm. So instead of having to be face-to-face with the doctor or technician when you do an ultrasound, you can actually get an ultrasound done remotely just using a robotic arm. That sort of on autopilot, you know, you just sort of hit, scan the shoulder, the robot arm scans the shoulder, sends off the images.
Really?
Yeah. We've got prototype one up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing that always amazes me when I work with young people is how smart they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These guys that I'm working with, they just absolutely take every concept I ever held to be true and say, well, you know, we can do that better. No, you know, that's what they used to do in the old days. And I go, I feel a little bit old now.
I was just having that conversation this morning.
Okay.
I love the ideas.
Yeah, and it's not only that, it's the fact that stuff can be implemented so well. So the short answer is yes, we can make things better, faster, cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is always keeping them relevant. So yes, you know, you can have this potentially cheaper remote telediagnostic center, but there still has to be the final link of what happens to the patient. How do we get to you to administer the care? There's no point saying, oh, look, that's a flat line. Our patient must be dead now. All right, let's go home.
And when you say remote, what do you mean? Where will you be?
Well,
and who would, you know, look after this patient? As you said, there's a flat line. What happens?
Okay, so that's the whole thing. That I think is the missing link in the system. In the US, for example, with radiology training now, they're having immense difficulty recruiting radiology trainees, because all the radiology, which is looking at x-rays and CT scans and making interpretations, all of that work's been outsourced to India.
Right.
Would you believe it?
I'm not surprised.
But the thing that's sort of dying hand in hand with losing radiology trainees is losing interventional radiologists. Well, if you find something that can be reached with a needle, now there's no one trained in order to get to it.
Exactly.
So I think that the technology always moves ahead of the practicability. So I think that with our robotic ultrasound arm, for an example, the model that we've developed is, in order to use it, you need to have a nominated healthcare provider within X kilometers of you. Otherwise, you can't access the service.
There has to be a radius.
There has to be a radius.
Hi, LTY, how are you? Thank you for calling.
Hello, Mira. I'm fine. How are you, Mira?
Very well, thank you.
And how are you, Dr. Raji?
Good, LTY. Almost high on the fumes.
Yes. Always nice talking, you know, with you. You know, your argument about this better healthcare. I fully agree with you about teamwork of specialists. This is a very important issue. But beside this, my opinion is about better healthcare. That means to say the children should start young and get some not exposed to medical knowledge. That is my opinion. You know, Dr. Rajiv, I started at Form 3 until now, you know, Rajiv. 50 over years, you know. Every day I spend 1 hour to 3 hours reading
right.
Medical parlance. I hope you can advise some listeners so that their children can start young. You know, it's very important already. Getting exposed to early medical knowledge is very, very important. Thank you, Raj. Thank you, Mira.
Thank you, LTY.
Thank you, LTY.
Which is a really good point, actually.
That
explains why he always, LTY calls up with such smart questions.
It's not, you know, hats off to you, LTY. You've got that the love to learn. what I like is to put Malaysian patient magazines next to Singaporean patient magazines, right? And look at the sort of the level at which they're pitched. And they're just chalk and cheese. The Singaporean patient magazines will have discussions of, let's talk about types of pain. You know, when I have this discussion with my patients and I say, look, chili also has a flavor. Not all chili just tastes hot. Every chili has a flavor. Yeah. So if chilies have flavor, pain also has a flavor. Mm-hmm. I need to know what is the flavor of your pain. And I swear, I'm going to write an article one day that's going to come out in the newspaper so we can have this conversation. Because when I ask the patient, what's the nature of the pain? I just get this blank look. Where if you look at those Singaporean patient information booklets and magazines, you know, they will say, is the pain burning? Is it shooting? Is it running? Is it like a cramp that comes and goes? Is it worse in the morning? Is it worse at night? All of those things are what we need patients to know. You know, the most important member of the healthcare team is the patient. The team exists for them. Unfortunately, you know, Malaysian healthcare teams, more often than not, the patient's a passive participant, while everyone else is running around creating a din. I don't see it so much now in the private sector, but in the public services, I'd have a patient who'd, you know, been in hospital for 6 months, and I'd ask them, what was wrong with you? They say, Tata, Dr. Kata kena tinggal.
So the question is, but do you think doctors are ready for patients to stop being passive and start being active members of diagnosis and treatment? Mm-hmm. When we come back, we'll find out after the market update. Our phone lines are open, 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. Dr. Rajesh Singh consults an orthopedic surgeon in the studio with me for his monthly show. We're discussing smart teams in healthcare and, of course, the whole effects of remote diagnosis and treatment. How does that work with smartphone apps, you know, coming into play now? You know, simple things like, you know, we tend to check our blood sugar levels at home. We check our blood pressure at home. I don't know. I don't find those gadgets reliable at all. I don't have much faith in them, Dr. Rajesh. I mean, am I being overly paranoid or cautious or, you know?
No, you're not seeing the pattern. So the thing about testing, and I'll go blue in the face saying this, is one swallow does not a spring maketh. That's Shakespearean for those Luddites.
And for those who didn't understand.
Yes. One single abnormal test doesn't mean anything, right? So what you're really looking for is you're looking for a pattern. And the home monitoring devices, they're all fine. But the thing that really excites me about sort of this remote diagnostic technologies is the volume of data that you can capture and then what you can do with that data. Again, getting back to clever young people, I was looking at one of the engineers and what he was doing was he was looking at noise and how noise occurs in an everyday setting. So say, for example, one of the things that he had was how we interact with our environment always produces a pattern of noise. So let's say that you want to predict when are you going to put your hand in your pocket to take your phone out. If you wore a sensor, just a simple microphone, and the noises that you made were analyzed consistently, the machine can predict with 99.9% certainty when you're going to reach in your pocket to take your phone out.
Wow.
Right? Now, you combine that with something like the Pebble Watch. That was a Kickstart funder, and this actually is a smartwatch that connects up with your smartphone. Mm-hmm. And just even the simple metal sensors at the back, they can be modified to measure the salt levels in the blood, the sugar levels, look at the pulse rate, which in themselves as a single reading don't make any sense. But the value is in the pattern when you can get this huge amount of individual physiological variation for the person, you can then look at patterns. Then you get the combined data for a population and you look at patterns again. And, you know, I've said from when I was in medical school, numbers don't lie because they literally well and truly don't. I did a physical examination for a young lady who was applying for the New Zealand School of Ballet. And we went through the physical examination and I said to her, you've had this injury, this injury, this injury. These are your current problems now. With her ever having to say anything. And she said to me, how do you know that? No one told you. I said, the body does not lie.
Right.
And the numbers don't lie because the evidence is there. The numbers don't lie. The evidence is in the numbers. The physical changes that we can see don't lie because they're there. the question is that whole sort of Sherlock Holmes things again, you see but you do not observe. Mm-hmm. You know, so what new technologies are allowing us to do is they're not allowing us to see more. We could always see those things. What they're allowing us to do is they're allowing us to observe more. And for that, we need smart young people.
Right. And of course, all of this data can actually go to a central location. As a doctor, you can actually monitor.
I disagree. All that data is best dealt with at the local level by the patient with the physician. Because that physician, you know, this I think is the big misconception in healthcare. People, this is talk about big data. Let's talk about what big data is. There's a lot of data about one individual. That's not big data.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's data about many individuals. That's big data. So people have got the two terms confused. People think that a lot of information about one person constitutes big data. It does not. The best person to deal with that information on one person is the person who is best placed to always deal with it, which is that person's physician. The person who is best placed to deal with the population-based data are the people who have always been in place to deal with population-based data, which are public health professionals and policymakers.
Which would do us a lot of good because we lack a lot of data in this country.
We lack a huge amount of data in this country. I did spend some time while I was at UKM collating local data for local conditions because our local conditions are different.
Yes.
The diseases are not different. The conditions are different. And that's one of the things that I labor at the medical school where I teach now. I say to the students, you've got an imported curriculum. There are deficiencies in that curriculum. Our job's to give it a local flavor so you understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I seriously believe that for a medical school, you need clinicians on the ground. You need doctors who treat patients to stop treating patients for a while and train the next generation of people who are going to treat patients.
Our phone lines are open 0377 109000. If you'd like to be a part of this discussion, if you have a question, if you have a comment, send it through to our text 0162019000, or you can even tweet BFM Radio. Call and ask Dr. Rajesh a question. In his TED Talk, Eric Dishman, which is the patient we were speaking about just now, he advocates for smart teams in healthcare, and he argues that care should be at home.
Mm-hmm.
Keep patients out of hospitals unless they're truly in need of hospitalization. Now, how is that defined?
I would love to see that happen. I would absolutely love to see that happen. Because I want to use my knowledge, skill and ability to the highest level that it can be used. And if I'm sorting out things that a GP could be sorting out, that's not using them to the highest level that they can be used. So people need to take some responsibility for their own healthcare. You know, there's a diabolical perversion in Malaysia, which says, I have insurance. Insurance is responsible for my healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just totally upside down. So patients are willing to accept anything and everything where it is the insurance provider will provide for that, regardless of how inconvenient, painful, dangerous, or unnecessary that treatment is. On the other hand, you know, there's no reward for being responsible for your own healthcare. And I think that, you know, well, look, if money incentivizes, then we need to incentivize people not to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
We need to incentivize people to say, well, you know, if you have a chronic illness, diabetes, for example, and you do not maintain your health within a certain range, then you get pinged an extra percentage on tax.
Right.
Because the state is going to have to pick up the tab for looking after you. And so, you know, when you think of, oh, that little piece of dodo looks nice, you know, have that extra stick of satay, there's a financial disincentive to doing it.
Yes.
You know, so as I said, the patient is central in the healthcare team. It's lovely looking after patients who are acutely unwell because we know that we can return them to a state of health.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely frustrating looking after patients who won't do what the fundamentals are. And there's an argument that if we can't make patients do what they should, then we're failing as healthcare practitioners. But I say, well, you know, at some point there's a lot of sort of logical human being argument which says, you're a responsible adult. This is a responsible adult conversation. Take responsibility.
Hi, Yong. How are you today?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Mira. Yeah, it's an interesting subject. Yeah, at this point in time, in view of the situation of the country we're in, they are not focused. I think the other segment mirror was with the Dr. George talking about national healthcare.
Yes.
Well, I have a friend who is from Japan, and he said that for elderly who reach up to age of 75, they have to go for yearly checkup, and before that, every 5 years. So they say that everyone is obliged to buy some health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a system in place, a very good one, that can take care of, Japan being having an aging population.
Yes.
And in this country, they're not focused, be it education or health or whatever. So we definitely need, patients are not required to be hospitalized. They have to be back home. So that's my take of it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Yong. Thank you.
Yong, I'm going to make a very controversial statement. And I'm going to disagree with you 100%.
Because you just spoke about insurance.
No. Because we speak English in KL on a talk radio show. You're not looking at the lowest common denominator. So what Malaysia has done is it's improved the lowest common denominator very, very well. Right? You're just far above the lowest common denominator. And I think that's the thing that you need to keep in perspective. The infant mortality, which is the number of babies who die within a set period after which they're born, and the number of mothers who die giving birth, we have amongst the record lowest numbers in the whole world.
Yep.
Right? And that infant and maternal mortality is the public health benchmark. So if you look at the expanding population in the country, the services have been aimed at the lowest common denominator. Now, you may argue that the lowest common denominator is being diluted by an influx of false IC holders from Sabah and a whole bunch of immigrants from, what's the euphemism in the newspaper, from a neighboring country.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
But I challenge you, Yong, go to a public school. Go to a public school and look at the size of the services available. You may say, well, they're of a lower quality than when I was in school. Yes, but when you were in school, the numbers required to provide were much smaller. So I thank you for calling, and I think you've raised a very, very important point. But I'd like you to sort of be aware that you're talking about different things. The lowest common denominator in Japan being a developed country is as exactly as you have put it. The lowest common denominator in Malaysia, being as it is different. So I think that there can be a higher level of denominator in the society that we live in. But, and certainly when you pay your taxes, you go, well, why aren't I getting anything, quote unquote, for what I pay for? But you have to look at where the lowest common denominator is, and it goes towards the lowest common denominator. And we enjoy the benefits of that lowest common denominator. That lowest common denominator feeds the people who do the menial jobs. When you go to a hotel and have a meal, the person serving you hasn't had the same level of education that you had. They came from a publicly funded school, probably from an underprivileged area, which is why they're doing that job. Mm-hmm. Right? So if it wasn't for the lowest common denominator, that person wouldn't be there. So that's my view on what we're doing right. Don't sort of get me mistaken for a card carrying, flag bearing member of the mainstream. I'm far from it.
But in terms of healthcare in this country, we can't go on the way we are, Dr. Radish. I mean, healthcare cost is escalating.
Why?
I mean, it's going to cost us a whole load of money.
But why?
So what is the solution then? Okay. What is your solution?
All right. My solution,
through the tax system?
No, my solution is make the situation leaner. It's the same bloat in the national healthcare system. So they looked at this lovely comparison. So national healthcare system is the health insurance system in the UK, which guarantees sort of free healthcare for all.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is the number of doctors for population has remained the same, right? From at the inception of the national healthcare system until now. What has changed is the number of administrators. So the number of administrators has increased by 100-fold. Not 10-fold, but 100-fold. So the cost now is administrative cost, not the cost of delivering healthcare. So the question is, how do you make healthcare cheaper? Is you leverage technology, you be more smart about it, you involve less people at the trough, you say, no, not all animals at the trough, right? This packet of money is for healthcare, which is a national health, which is a national requirement. And, you know, put aside some of the, what's the politically correct word for it? Cronyism?
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be rife wherever money is involved, and actually be able to say, right, let's have some clear benchmarks. I look after X number of people. These are the healthcare outcomes that I help to mediate. So I make Y amount of money. You know, from a public health services, that's one way to look at it. And, you know, these aren't new ideas. One concept is what's called the case mix, where, you know, if you have a pregnant, schizophrenic, hypertensive, diabetic mother who's about to deliver, mm-hmm. it's very different to, 25-year-old first time having a baby who's otherwise fit and well. But on paper, they look exactly the same. But, you know, you can imagine that the services required for one versus the other are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not alone. The Americans have done it very well. So the Kaiser Permanente, which is a large American healthcare organization, they've actually got penalties for employees in insurances in companies who don't look after their health. Because it's literally going to translate as in, if you don't do these things, mm-hmm. you're going to end up costing society more. So if you want to smoke cigarettes, sure, fine. But it's going to cost you more. You know, so it's out there. It's been done. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. I think the issue with healthcare cost containment is far more political than it is medical.
What about the whole idea of implementation of a new healthcare system? As you said, cronyism, you know, the right people, efficiencies,
yes,
have to be there.
Yes, and I just don't see it. You know, call me a skeptic. It's a bureaucratic top-down system which already screams, you know, red stamp on forehead, a bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it improving. You know, one of my sisters-in-law is living with me at the moment, and she works at a clinic, Kesihatan. It's 350 patients a day, 400 patients a day in a 5-doctor clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them are patients who are getting good quality healthcare at ₱1. You know, we haven't gone far wrong. But when they don't take their medications, they don't follow their instructions, they come to the general hospital with a complication, or they demand to see the specialist because they've got a cold that hasn't got better in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Okay. You know what? We're running out of time, and, you know, I'd love to... Have you ever thought of going into politics?
Never crossed my mind.
I think you should. I really think you should. And I think you should give... I shall not say that. That's all right. That will be politically incorrect. Okay. But I'll tell you once the mics go off.
Oh, you don't get to hear this.
But, you know, your
message... You and I are going to have a little quiet one.
Your message on smart teams in healthcare. When we came out talking about, you know, smartphone apps and things like that. But just a quick conclusion on your take on it.
Okay, take charge of your health. Take responsibility for your health. Understand that you are the purpose why the healthcare system exists. And when you die, you're not valuable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So stay alive, be healthy, and help us to look after you.
Thank you very much for joining me today. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon on smart teams in healthcare on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.